This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide from Pod Bay 2A, high atop Financial Beast Studios on Lipair 2017B in the Alpha Centauri region. I am Mr. Michael Dean. I am talking to Mr. Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. Are you there, sir? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I'm here. I am safe, and I have not been contacted by the government. I'm deep within the swamps of southern Alabama.
Sounds safe. Safe-ish. I think there's always been a lot of outlaws down there in the swamps. And so we are fiend phoning it in. We're talking over fiend phone. And, you know, Ben sounds pretty good. He doesn't sound great because he's on 4G, but this is the ongoing proof that fiend phone works. And it works even though you can even phone in remotely with no wires. How are you doing, Ben? How do you sound, Ben?
I think I sound okay. I feel good. It's a nice day.
Yeah.
You sound... Every day free is a good day.
Every day free and, What makes you happy? Tell me.
You know, honestly, I hate to just sound like a cliche, but really freedom is the thing that I think is so deep within the human spirit. We want to be left alone. We want to do the things that we want to do, and we don't want to be messed with, whether by, you know, a government agency or other people or whatever. We just, and that's, fortunately, that's kind of my life right now. I can almost exist without having negative interactions with people. It's really nice.
I exist without having interactions with almost any people except my wife in person. That's by choice. And, you know, it's not like I'm afraid of the people or the world or the sunlight or anything. I go out shopping. I go out to the store. I go to Porkfest once every 2 years. And if I see my shadow, there's 3 more years of tyranny. So that's what... But, you know, that song that plays at the beginning of the show, and on the weekend I use the one with the lyrics, on the weeknights I don't, and the weekend one has the lyrics, and it's kind of funny. I was just thinking about this while we were getting ready for the show and listening to that while it's playing live on the air, because we're doing part 4 today in our 36-part series, where we go through the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and yes, 12 concepts of world service of Alcoholics Anonymous. One per show, and apply them not to alcohol and drugs, but, the 12, this is our 12-step program, Statists Anonymous, and we apply them to getting over bad people and the state, you know, the love of needing a leader to tell you what to do and, waving flags and thinking they set you free when they are really the banners of your captors. We love America. We just don't like the idea of that we have to be beholden to a group of thugs because 51% of the people voted them in. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, or even some might argue that since nowhere near half the people vote, you know, only like 30 or 40% of the people vote most of the time. And so really, who elected these clowns? I didn't. And who gave them
old
the authority
people
to tell us?
Old people. Yeah. And we're old. We're in our 50s. So, you know, we're not talking about people. We're talking about people who are old of mind. We're talking about people younger than us up through, you know, 128 or however the oldest person is. But here's the thing. That song that plays, it says, maybe I'll be happy when I get there. Maybe I'll be happy when I leave here. Maybe I'll be happy when I love you. Maybe I'll be happy when I'm fappy. Maybe I'll be happy when I'm finally done. Maybe I'll be happy with Vicky. Maybe I'll be happy with Maggie. Maybe I'll be happy with Michelle. Maybe I'll be happy with myself right now. Maybe I'll be happy in New Orleans. Maybe I'll be happy in a castle with Maxine. Maybe I'll be happy in D.C., I was living in D.C. I'm sorry, but I would never be happy in D.C. now. So it's going through this whole long list. And then the last line is, maybe I'll be happy right now. Maybe I'll be happy with myself. Maybe I'll be happy right now. Maybe I'll be happy with myself. Now, I was still deep in drugs when I wrote that snappy little toe-tapping number. I got sober coming up on 20 years ago. That song was me trying to do the steps. You know, it had my list of resentments. It had my, it had my list of people I owed amends to. It had, you know, lists of goals. It had, you know, like where I wanted to be when I got the things out of my life that I didn't like. I was kind of trying to do the steps in there. And at the same time, like deep, deep in denial, because I always thought, not really deep in denial, kind of at the point where, you know, we talked about in the first step how saying you're an alcoholic isn't really admitting you're isn't really doing a first step. It's not conceding to your innermost self, if I drink, I will do it till it kills me early and sad and horribly, which is really conceding it. So it was somewhere between those two. You know, it was kind of like I was making fun of the fact that I kept thinking I'd be happy with something outside myself. And at the end, I have concluded, no, I'll be happy with myself right now. But it's not, it's kind of like, you know, you don't really, you haven't really gotten there if you're, I hadn't really accomplished it. I admitted the possibility. And there's actually another song on that record, Happy All the Time is the name of the record. It's an EP by my old band Bomb. If any, there are some Bomb listeners out there. There is another song on that. I think it's called Because Pan Says or something like that. And it's kind of a sound collage. It's me making sweet, sweet love with my woman at the time. I surreptitiously recorded us and then said, hey, this sounds great. Can I use it on a record? And she said, I'd be honored. So I did. And then it's got my guitar player doing a bunch of feedback over it. And then a bunch of backwards talking and then sound effects of people breaking bottles. We went out of the studio, outside the studio on the street, set up a mic and broke bottles. And then we swept them up. And you hear us breaking them, but you also hear us with brooms sweeping them up. So we were good punk rockers. And there's some backwards talking in there. If you play the talking backwards and listen to it forwards, it's me like trying to like create my own 12-step system. It's like a list of things that eventually actually became my book, A User's Manual for the Human Experience. It was like my drugged out notes for the good book I wrote later while sober. So yeah, man, you can't do it in one 4-minute pop number. It's a process.
You know, and also you were kind of like, you're trying to reinvent the wheel there. You know, you were trying on your own to go down a path that many other people have already gone down, and many other people have been successful on that path and some have not. But you were trying to go it on your own, and I think that's a lot of the – I'm not an alcoholic, so I'm looking at this from the outside looking in, and I'm always open to correction. But it seems to me that one of the very common things to do is to try to fix our problem on our own. We have this pride, this ego. We can do this on our own. We don't need to go seek help. We don't need to, you know, open our soul to someone else. We don't need to admit terrible things that we don't even want to think about. You know, but really and truly, I mean, this path is a well-worn path that many people have gone down, and there's no reason to have to stop and reinvent the wheel when it's already been done for you. And as we're showing here with our program, you can apply these 12 steps to so many things in life that will just, you know, it will mechanize a process so that you don't have to go through and reinvent the wheel on every single aspect of it.
Yeah, I'd been to a couple meetings before I wrote that song, but never really like worked it. You know, I just kind of went because I thought I had a problem, or because, you know, it was Christmas and my girlfriend and I, the girl that, you know, is recorded in that song I was talking about, and she's one of the people I name in the song. You know, it was Christmas and we'd spent all our money on dope, and we were out of food and coffee, and like, hey, there's a meeting down the street and they have cookies and coffee and it's warm. And, you know, we forgot to pay our electric bill for some reason too, so it was cold. So yeah, I'd go to some meetings from time to time, but I didn't really get it. I got the idea that there was something to get, but you know, what I was trying to do with that song and that record and that backward stuff on that record and the whole band and the whole thing, I was trying to like find recovery and self-improvement, but be able to keep doing the hard drugs. And, you know, it just doesn't really work that way, man. So, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of parallels between, you know, what we've been talking about here with addiction and the level of faith that people have in government, that, you know, that the government is the answer to our problems. We don't need to do this or that. All we have to do is trust government. All we have to do is vote again. All we have to do is get the right guy in there. All we have to do is get to D.C. All we have to do is, you know, there's all these levels of denial or of trying to convince ourselves that we don't have to get rid of the thing that's really causing the problem, and that we can just work around it. Or, you know, oftentimes we think, well, here's the problem. You know, Obama, that's the problem. Obama is the bad guy. He's the evil thing. If we get rid of him, we'll be fine.
No.
And we're not facing the deeper problem that causes us to need an Obama or a Bush or whoever.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the fourth step today of Statists Anonymous, which is adopted from the fourth step of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I got a note from somebody on the blog, someone named Buzz. Buzz told me that we'd said one thing that was wrong, and I like to say when I'm wrong. We talked about this organization that the Washingtonians, and I said that they had a lot to do with the formation of the 12 steps. And he said they actually had more to do with the formation of the traditions. And he's correct. I've forgotten that. It's been a long time since I've cracked the Bill Wilson story, Pass It On. But the Oxford Group is the name of the group that contributed a lot to the steps. They had sort of a 4-point plan for self-improvement that was expanded to the 12 steps, you know, broken up into like piecemeal. So, you know, resistant alcoholics could swallow it, basically. And then they added, you know, another one at the end, which was basically spreading the news, bringing the message to other people. But the Oxford Group kind of did that in their formation anyway. And the Oxford Group was a good organization, but they didn't really love hanging out with they didn't really love, you know, like ego-driven people like Bill W., who stood up in meetings and said, "We need to completely rechange this and concentrate on alcoholics, and I can tell you how to change your system," you know. kind of like every group I've ever been in, they kind of drove them out. So, and then, then there were the fact that the founder of the Oxford Group liked to quote Hitler in a favorable way. But we'll talk about that. You know, there may have been some good things before that happened. So, and you know, Bill W. took it, cut and run, took what he wanted and left the rest. We'll talk about that when we get back from this trip to the free market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com, FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Freedom Fiends. Yep. Yep. All right. So we're talking about the 12 steps of Statists Anonymous. And today is step 4. We're going to read it, but first I have to like bury the bombshell that I lit before the break. That there's no connection between like AA and Hitler. And but the Oxford Group was started by this guy named Frank Buckman. It was basically kind of like a, you know, Christian businessman's organization in the early part of the 1900s, 1920, 1930. And Bill Wilson went there to help his alcoholism before he took their ideas and went and improved them and formed AA and made it into a single issue group. The Washingtonians, their thing that's more important in AA is the fact they were an example of what not to do in the traditions in AA. One of them is about you know, there's only one purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's to help alcohol. Like, basically what that means is don't get involved into politicking. Don't get involved in regulating alcohol. Don't get involved in environmentalism. Don't get involved in anything but helping alcoholics get sober. Because the Washingtonians were the bad example that AA was trying to prevent from happening. The Washingtonians were an alcohol recovery group, but they got really, really heavily into political efforts to ban alcohol. And, you know, AA were smart enough in the early on to realize, like, hey, man, it doesn't matter if other people drink. It's only about us and about me. You know, AA is a very giving program, but it's also a very me-centric program. And the idea is that you have to save yourself before you can, you know, be useful to anybody else. And the Washingtonians got sidetracked by, well, we're sober now. Everyone else has to be sober, you know, kind of like they kind of remind me of like Linux users. There are some Linux users who, if they could, would make it the law that everyone has to use Linux. I think I really do. I love Linux, but, you know, Linux users are like a weird, some of them are like a weird religious cult who just have to pop up all the time and say Linux, 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 Linux. So, yeah.
You know, libertarians, I hate to say it, but we kind of, and anarcho-capitalists as well.
Who's this we you're speaking of? I'm not a collectivist.
I'm going to collectivize here with an anti-collectivist group. But so, I'll say it this way. So many so-called leaders among libertarians have a tendency to get distracted, exactly what you just described, and they make the whole thing, they make the battle bigger than it needs to be. They bring in all kinds of side issues that don't need to be part of it. And you see this pretty regularly. And occasionally you'll see one of the old guard that'll step up and say, you know, excuse me, but that's not what this is.
Yeah.
And oftentimes when that happens, you know, especially if it's someplace like Facebook or wherever, oftentimes that old guard will get pounded down because the talk of the moment is whatever the hot thing on Facebook is, and all the voices want to focus on that. But that's kind of what you're talking about there with, like, you know, it's not about banning alcohol. It's not about, you know, changing some kind of societal thing. It's about you. Your individual situation. What are you going to do? How are you going to face the responsibilities that are in your life?
Yeah, that's why I gave up on trying to, like, you know, point out that, you know, certain so-called philosophers are wrong and people shouldn't follow them, because the problem isn't those people. It's the fact that people follow them. And if that guy went away, right, those same people would follow someone else. And like Bill Buebert says, and I said this wrong the other day on the show, I'm going to correct it. It's don't worry about the, I'm paraphrasing, don't worry about the question authority, worry about the question obedience, you know, because with, and this is your whole thing of the difference between the state and the government, is the state is the problem, not the government. The state is the mindset of people following leaders, and without obedience, there is no authority. Without obedience, authority has no authority, would be the easiest way to say that. Okay, so this guy from this started the Oxford group, Frank Buckman, went on to start something called Moral Rearmament. Boy, that sounds scary. Which turned into the weird, squeaky clean, spooky, cult-like pop group Up With People in the 60s, who actually were like used by the government kind of as pawns to like go over and entertain people in third world countries to make them like America so they could go in and like take all their minerals and stuff. So, Frank, the Oxford group did not leave a good legacy except for, you know, AA splintering off of it, or, you know, AA taking its steps and expanding on them. Yeah. And the idea of, you know, first century Christianity, one man speaking to another, going out into the gutter and talking to, you know, the bums and they need help and the lepers and whatever, rather than having a big crystal cathedral, which I like a lot. And
yeah, and definitely.
We'll be back on our radio crystalline cathedral here after this trip to the free market. Or we'll really start talking about the steps, I promise.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN.
Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends, the antidote to Up With People. So Ben Stone, my Liberty co-sponsor. I think we're kind of co-sponsors. Used to be my Liberty sponsor, but I think it's not that the pupil has become the teacher, but it's more like I think we kind of help each other out. Would you say that's true?
I think so. We both kind of lean on each other, long extended phone calls talking about nothing and great things.
We talk each other out of posting things on the internet that we shouldn't when we're filled yeah. with resentments. And, you know, it's funny because people think of people know I'm a cranky SOB, but they think of you as a really like morally centered, like calm Buddha kind of guy. And you're not always, man. And but the thing is, you're smart enough to not foist it on the world, unlike me. And I am filled with resentments a lot of the time, but I deal with them. And I'm pretty cranky and filled with resentment. So let's talk about the fourth step. Let's first recap the first three steps. We, blah, blah, blah. Go on.
So the first one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives.
Who is this we of which you speak? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, that's a good question, because what we're talking about here in the context of the book, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, it's kind of advice from those who have gone through it already, talking to those who are in the middle of going through it. So when Bill says, we admitted this, he's talking about the experience of those who have gone before. So step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And the second step, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And the third step, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And this brings us to today's fourth step. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves.
Oh, no.
So what that means is,
oh, no.
we have some homework.
I don't want to do that.
You know, I was thinking about it, the first two steps, and I mentioned part of this in the last show that we did together, but the first two steps are about reflection. They don't actually require action. And you kind of inferred that earlier when you were talking. It only requires reflection and honesty. And the third step requires a decision and a commitment. But this fourth step that we're on today,
it's got homework. It's paper and
yeah,
pen, man.
You got to do stuff.
You know,
it puts feet on it.
I started going to AA in 94. That's when I got sober. And my first sponsor, and, you know, I know that you're not supposed to talk about yourself as a member of AA on the radio. It's in one of the traditions. At the level of press, radio, and films, that's the one step we're taking out of Status Anonymous. And this is Status Anonymous. And I am no longer a member of AA. So I feel I can talk openly. Because really the reason that's in there is to prevent people's bad individual actions from reflecting bad on AA. You know, like if somebody goes on the radio and they're like, yes, I'm in AA. It's great. It helps me be sober. And then they do something horrible or they relapse very publicly. People say, oh, AA doesn't work or AA is for creeps. But I'm not a member of AA, so you shouldn't judge AA on me. Other than I'll say it helped me and I would be a worse person without it. But it's no longer responsible for my actions and it really never was.
And I wanted to reiterate, since we're on the radio and this is not just an internet show, we have people coming and going, and they might, you know, they might think, oh, they're just talking about alcohol today. But we really are trying to make comparisons.
No, man, we're drunk.
Being addicted.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
We're not.
We're trying to make comparisons between being addicted to government in one form or another, or other things, being addicted to bad leadership in your life, or being addicted to people that are destructive in your life. We're making comparisons on how you can use the 12 steps to apply them to these other things to bring freedom in your life. That's really what it's all about.
Yeah. God, you sound, and, you know, alcohol, you sound good today, Ben. You really do.
Alcohol kills the pain. I've said this last week. Alcohol kills the pain of life by stupefying the brain. But also, you know, addiction, it kind of severs the individual from your responsibilities. So anybody who's ever heard the Pink Floyd song where in the background there's sort of talking and somebody says, I don't know, I was really drunk at the time. And how many of us have said something like that? I don't know what happened. I was drunk. Hey, it was a party. And you can excuse your actions like that. And that's what addiction provides. It provides a way to be able to not face up to the things that you're actually responsible for.
Yeah. Addiction makes your life worse, whether it's to substances or people or government or bad ideas, or bad people. But, you know, it does kind of simplify your life in a way. It instead of having a bunch of problems, you only have one huge problem. There's other problems connected to it, but really it's like that's the only problem.
Yeah. That addiction problem might be in the process of consuming you and everything in your life, but you only got that one problem.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, you know, you got other problems. You got the rent. You got to get the drugs or the alcohol. Then you got the rent. Then you got the, you know, the spouse is leaving you. You got the, you know, the boss is firing you. The school is kicking you out. You know, all the horrible things that go along with it. The police are after you. You know, when I was using drugs, here's the thing. I will say, like they say, well, the war on drugs, we can win it. We got to just crack down more. I was pretty much not aware heroin was illegal when I was a heroin addict. I mean, I knew that if you asked me, but I remember one time, like this is how clueless I was. Like I remember one time I was out at a coffee shop, you know, and, my friend said, come outside for a sec. And I'm like, what? He said, come outside. And he kind of looked around, like made sure there's no one around. And he reached behind my ear and he pulled a loaded capped syringe from behind my ear that was sticking out behind my hair and stuck it in my shirt pocket and then like put the shirt flap over it. And he's like, you left the house like that? I'm like, oh yeah, I guess. All right, whatever. Yeah. The threat of incarceration. The threat of incarceration did not stop me, and it will not stop anybody. So legalize it and get people into treatment. And, you know, I got sober in outpatient treatment that was mostly privately funded and just went to meetings. And I was a pretty bad addict. So some people can do that, man. And, you know, other people, I think you could do it without the government. I think there are people in recovery who, you know, want to pass it on so much to people that if there were not, like, you know, rehabs you could go to, they'd probably say, look, if you want to get clean, I'll give you a cot in my basement and a bucket to vomit into and, you know, a sandwich or some soup if you can keep it down. And I'll just sit here and read the NA book with you and talk with you. You know, there are people that would do that. And that's actually, you know, when you go to the Salvation Army detox, my friend went to it. That's what it is. It is a cot on a floor. No, it was a blanket on the floor, like a mat, like a wrestling, a yoga mat on the floor with an emergency hurricane blanket and a bucket to throw up into. And that's pretty much, and a Bible and an AA meeting, you know, that was the Salvation Army detox. So, and, he got clean through that. So it's possible. So let's, read again this fourth step and reflect on it and what it really means in Status Anonymous.
Number four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. You know, also, I wanted to read a little bit from the book.
Yeah, man, do it. This is a book study meeting.
It's called 12 Steps and 12 Traditions by Bill W. It's been written by Bill Wilson in 1953. And I think I said last week that after reading this, you know, I've had a lot of people say, oh, you ought to read that book. And I thought, yeah, whatever. But after actually sitting down and reading it and going through it a couple times now, I have to say that this is really, really important. And I think anybody who considers themselves in, you know, there's often called the liberty movement, which is not a phrase I really like, but if libertarianism or anarcho-capitalism, or if you're an anarchist, or if you're a Republican or a Democrat, and you know, any of these titles that you feel attach themselves to you, or you attach themselves to them, I would really encourage you to read this book, because I think in almost any situation you're facing, it has so many gems that can open your eyes. But I wanted to read a little section of it. It says, creation gave us instincts for a purpose. Without them, we wouldn't be complete human beings. If men and women didn't exert themselves to be secure in their persons, made no effort to harvest food or construct shelter, there would be no survival. If they didn't reproduce, the earth wouldn't be populated. If there were no social instinct, if men cared nothing for the society of one another, there would be no society. And, you know, so it's not that any of these instincts or any of these urges are bad. It's that things have to be in balance. And when they get out of balance, that's where the problem comes in. And I think, you know, so often people think of the government as supplying these things for us. But these things aren't a product of government. These things are a product of human nature. People want to eat. They want to provide shelter for their family. They want to interact with each other in peaceable ways. And in doing that without the burden of government, you know, it causes us to be responsible for our own actions, rather than saying, well, the government will take care of that, or, well, the cop will make that guy behave. No, instead, we make ourselves behave. We make sure that we provide for ourselves. We're not relying on somebody else. And we make sure that the other guy who is near us that needs something, we provide it for him. We're not willing to go and rob somebody and give it to him, which really that's what government is.
Yeah. So when I did a fourth step the first time, and it was kind of funny because, you know, this is in 94 when like not a lot of people were on computers, and I had a computer, and I did my fourth step on a computer, and I like brought the disc to my sponsor, and he's like, I don't know what that is. And I said, well, I'll print it out for you. And he said, no, you got to do the steps like they did in the early days in AA. You got to do it with a pen and pencil and paper, or pen and paper. And, you know, thinking back, I'm thinking they didn't have ballpoint pens in 1935. So he did his wrong, because he used a ballpoint pen. But so, you know, I actually fired that sponsor and got a sponsor who was a computer network administrator. And he was fine with me doing my first step on a computer.
You have to chisel it on a rock like my grandpappy.
Yeah, basically. And but you know, in early AA, they didn't write that all out. They did like in AA, they did like all 12 steps in one day in really early AA. It was later after this book came out that you're talking about, they kind of figured out, you know, maybe spread it out a little bit more. Is this actually the book, the 12 and 12? Is that what people recommended to you, or did they recommend the AA book? People don't recommend the 12 and 12 much.
I've had both recommended, but I sadly say I didn't pay much attention.
All right. We're back with the end of this hour, and then go into the next hour after this trip to the market.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Founding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Hard name. Welcome to Ben Stone and Michael Dean's Home for Wayward Weirdos in Liberty. This is the part 4 in our 36-part series about the traditions, steps, traditions, and concepts of AA applied to statism and bad people. We're on step four. So what my sponsor had me do, people have different sponsors do it different ways, but for my first step, what he had me do was make a list of everything I'd done for drugs or alcohol that I wouldn't have done otherwise that had harmed me. And when I got to a list of several hundred of those things, I was not able to read it out loud to him and still say, yeah, I think I can have just one. And for my fourth step, he had me make a list of all my resentments. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of alcoholics who go to AA do the first three steps right away and then sit on their fourth step forever. It's like a big deal. Like, oh, man, you get around to your fourth step yet? No, man, I'm still balking on my fourth step. And the thing is, like, I kind of did that for a while until my sponsor said, you show me an alcoholic who doesn't want to talk about what pisses him off. And he used that term. He's like, you know, you show me an alcoholic that doesn't want to rattle off his resentments. And, you know, I've never seen such a beast. And I was like, you know, you're right. I resent a lot of things and I would love to talk about them because I hold them dear. And so I made this list of resentments. And it was three columns. You know, I had the list of resentments, and it was mostly people, but, you know, it was also institutions. It was the post office lost my package. It was the government takes my money, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was all these things that I resented. And that was column one. And then column, and there were 600, there were over 600 things on my list. That's an inordinate amount, man. Most people probably have, you know, 10 or 20 or 30 tops. And I had 600 and something. And that's the first column. And the second column is like, you know, what I think they did to me. And then the third column is like what my part in it was, you know. And I wrote this all out. It took me several months. And then it made me realize like a lot of patterns came up. Like, you know, I thought all these different people had done me wrong in all these different ways. And really, it turned out to be, you know, as my dad would say about things, same book, different chapter. You know, it was like the same kind of situations, the same kind of girl problems, the same kind of friend problems, the same kind of problems with strangers. And it was like so much of it was avoidable, and so much of it I had some part in it, you know. And it really helped to write them all down and read them to somebody, which is the next step. We're not there to that step yet, but it's a fearful thing to take a moral inventory. And, you know, there's something in the AA big book along the lines of like, you know, think of a business. Like a business cannot exist if it doesn't take inventory. It has to know like what it has on hand that's good, what it needs to get more of that's good, what has gone bad and is sour and is going to infect everything else in the grocery store, you know, or in where the food is stored. You have to take an inventory of things to, you know, keep your business going. And the same thing is true with a person. You can't survive just going, you can't thrive just going, yeah, man, it's all good, whatever. I don't even know. I don't even look at my stuff, you know.
You know, that's a really good comparison. I used to run a series of pizza restaurants. My wife and I both managed pizza restaurants, and the company we worked for kind of moved us around from place to place. Wherever there was a problem restaurant, they would send us there.
You were the A team? You were the pizza A team?
Yeah. We really were. And the first thing that we would do going in, well, there was two things. First off was cleanliness, because often a problem with a store that's with a pizza restaurant that's having problems, cleanliness is one of their main problems. So we would attack cleanliness and we would attack inventory control. And oftentimes the managers who were struggling and just really working their rear ends off trying to make this work, very often they didn't have a physical inventory that they checked every single day. And that was one of the things that we always emphasized, is you have to know what you have on hand, what's selling, what's gone bad, what needs to be thrown out. You have to be on top of that, and you have to walk around every single day and take an inventory of everything you have. And we did it with a clipboard and a pencil and a piece of paper. And that's the way you have to do it. And this is so fundamental that very often a manager who had been a manager for several years would think he was beyond that step. think he didn't have to do it, but it's that important.
Yeah, and now it can be done with computers, and so can your fourth step, but it cannot be automated the way inventory can be done. Inventory is not really automated. Somebody has to check, yeah, that container ship exists. All right.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Secondhand Facebook.
Secondhand Facebook will destroy your lungs and mind. Oh, show's on. There it is. Yeah. Secondhand Facebook is almost as dangerous as being on Facebook. To stop it. If someone in the room is using Facebook, it affects you negatively. This is Michael D from the Freedom Fiends talking to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. This is part four. This is hour two of part two. This is hour two of two of part four of our 36-part show series, Rock Musical Extravaganza. The 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts of world service of Statists Anonymous. And we're riffing off the AA book here. It's good stuff. It's worked for a lot of people. It worked for me with drugs and alcohol. And then I retired from it. I graduated. I went and wrote my own book called A User's Manual for the Human Experience, which is kind of like grad school for 12-step kind of stuff. But it really boils it down to two steps. But that's a whole different story. And it's a good book, and you can get it free. You can go just Google User's Manual for the Human Experience, or it'll be in the show notes of this episode. And Ben Stone, why don't you reiterate the wording of the fourth step of all of the anonymous groups, including Statists Anonymous? What you got there, brother?
Yeah, so number four, we made a searching and fearless We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves.
That sounds scary. That sounds so scary.
Yeah, this is homework.
It really does. It's scarier than homework for a lot of people because it's something most people never done. Most people have done some homework. Most people aren't afraid of a little writing, but man, writing down what's wrong with you is not that inviting. But once you get doing it, and if you have someone to help you who's been there before, it can really be useful, man. That's what I found.
We were talking about instincts in the last hour, too, and I had quoted some of the book, and we had talked about how instincts, you know, are actually, they're a part of us, they're a part of us as humans that are created within us. Whatever the purpose or whatever the process of creation that you believe in, whether you think that, you know, God created us with purpose or God created us through randomness or just the universe created us through randomness or whatever, however we got to where we are today, we have instincts because they keep us alive in nature. So, you know, if we get too hot, we feel like we need to cool off. And if we get too cold, we feel like we need to warm up some. And these things are absolutely natural to us. Things like the desire to eat and the desire to make sure that we have proper shelter and that we're going to survive and that we reproduce and, you know, our social instincts to get along with each other and to form groups with each other that we can depend on, and the need to help other people. That's a thing that humans have that's really natural to us. But where the twisting comes in is any time that these things get out of balance. In the book that we're referring to, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, I've got a little quote I wanted to read here. It says, "Nearly every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case of misdirected instinct. When that happens, our great natural assets, the instincts, have turned into physical and mental liabilities. Step four is our vigorous and painstaking effort to discover what those liabilities, discover what these liabilities in each of us have been and are. We want to find exactly how, when, and where our natural desires have warped us. We wish to look squarely at the unhappiness that has caused others. We want to look squarely at the unhappiness that this has caused others and ourselves. By discovering what our emotional deformities are, we can move forward toward their corrections. Without a willing and persistent effort to do this, there is little sobriety or contentment for us." So that's how critical it is that we honestly face these things and list them out and really take a look and see how our how these instincts are being twisted and modified.
Yeah, and if people want to substitute something else for the word sobriety here, you know, I would just say recovery, like recovery from statism, recovery from statism and bad people and bad ideas. You know, I remember when I first got a computer, which was 1991, I was not on the internet. I was on the internet at the library on Gopher in 92 or 93, but, and I was on the web in 95 at a job. I worked at one of the first like web cafes in San Francisco in the world, but it was in San Francisco. It was a steak restaurant. And I've talked about why it was at 9th and Folsom, which is a business location that it seems like everything that puts its business on that corner fails within a year. It's had, you know, the 16 years I lived there had probably 14 different businesses there, but their business plan was bad from the beginning because you were able to eat a good steak and surf the web at your table while you did it in 95, but they thought it was a cute idea to have the monitors up on the walls so everyone could see what you were surfing. The NSA Cafe. No, it's not what it was called. But and then I was on the web at home, actually on DSL in 1996. But in 91, I had a, you know, Office Equipment International XT8086 that was basically a word processor. I was using it for word processing, and I was writing a novel on it. And I'd started this novel on a dictaphone and then on a typewriter and then on this computer. I transcribed it all and then started editing it and later got sober and published it. It's called Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women. You can buy a used copy of it on Amazon. And I published that in 2000. And this is before there was like on-demand printing. Like I got a copy of Quark and did the page layout and went to a printer and got it printed and bound, pressed 1,000 copies of it. But that experience with the computer, and I was still using drugs then, and I ended up actually pawning that computer but saved the disks, the 5.5-inch floppy disks. So the experience of editing that blew me away because I'd been writing on a typewriter where, like, you know, if you write 10 pages and then you decide you want to take a paragraph from page 6 and put it on page 2, you either have to, like, take a razor blade and glue or you have to type the whole thing over. And with a computer, I was blown away that you could just, like, highlight and move stuff or highlight and delete stuff or search and replace or search and delete. And I didn't even have a mouse. This was like with key commands and stuff. So it was a task compared to now, but it was still way easier than doing it on a typewriter. And I was really just astonished with the idea of like, why can't I do that in my life? Why can't I just search the word delete, you know, addiction in my brain, or the word heroin, or the word alcohol in my brain, or like desire for alcohol, and just delete it? And it's not that easy, but these steps kind of give you the ability to change your life. There's a lot of ways people can change their life, from, you know, religion to 12-step programs to fight clubs to, you know, anything. But I would say that a lot of processes that people have for self-improvement that work, one of the things that they all probably have in common is some kind of searching and fearless moral inventory, or at least some kind of inventory. You know, I mean, any self-help book before or after the 12 steps is going to have something in it about, like, you know, write down on a piece of paper what you're trying to accomplish and what's standing in your way. You know, that's a form of taking inventory.
Yeah. You know, I kind of wrote in preparation for today's show, I kind of wrote a version of the Declaration of Independence, if you don't mind. I think I can squeeze it in before our next break.
I'm
going to
make popcorn for this, man. Go ahead.
Governments are institutions created by humans. We are told that the purpose is to serve these basic human desires. However, when any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is our right and our responsibility to alter or abolish that government. We know, and all experience has shown, that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But there comes a time when a person can no longer wait for things to right themselves. A time comes when, finding himself in the gutters of life, a man has to stand up, dust himself off, and do something about the condition he finds himself in. It is his right, it is his duty to throw off such chains and take steps to secure his future. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about. We're talking about taking steps.
What was that a combination of? I mean, I know there's some original stuff in there, but what was that?
That was essentially the first part of the Declaration of Independence, modified from a crazy anarcho-capitalist
point
of view.
That's what I thought. Okay. I thought there was a Willie Nelson line in there, too, but I could have been wrong. There's something about the dust yourself off part. Like, I swear I've heard that in, like, an outlaw country song. But
it could be.
Yeah.
But, you know, reading Bill's stuff here in this book, he does actually mention that, and I think this was more commonly believed in the olden days of AA than maybe it is today, and you can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but it seemed like they used to believe that you absolutely couldn't fix the situation unless you went all the way to rock bottom.
Right.
But I think more and more people are being able to use these steps without going all the way to the very end.
Yeah, they talk about that further in that book, in the traditions part. In early AA, the only members they would take were people who were homeless and in the gutter, because they were the only ones that they'd had success with. And then later on, other people came in who were not that far gone, and they were like, well, and meetings would actually like have a vote on this, like, well, go stand outside in the rain and we'll vote on it and you can come back in, or we'll have a group conscience on it, which also led to the tradition of, you know, the only desire for membership is the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. And there's an interesting part about that in the book. Basically, it was like, you know, this was this white affluent businessman's club, kind of, you know, the guys who ran, I mean, they'd lost everything, but they had connections. When they got sober, they got rich again. And they didn't let women in. And like in the middle of the night, one time this guy showed up, he was black. He was a drug addict and an alcoholic, and he was a cross dresser. And they actually had a group conscience and decided to let him come in. And that's talked about later in this book. And that was kind of part of the basis of that tradition of, you know, they don't let any, if you want to get sober, we'll help you, you know, come on in, sit down and have some coffee.
Well, taking this back to the government, you know, individuals that I know personally who really believe that all they had to do was just follow the democratic process, get involved, you know, rock the vote, get people in, you know, all these ideas like this, that you could fix government or you could change government or you could modify it. And many of them had to hit rock bottom before they understood that it was a lie.
And the rock bottom was realizing that they wouldn't let Ron Paul get elected, even if he had the votes.
Yeah.
Yep. That's why a lot of black people hit rock bottom and became militants in the 60s, because they got locked out of the voting system by the Democrats.
Yeah.
In this case, it was the Republicans locking them out.
You're listening Republican to Freedom out. Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Freedom Fiends. We are not militants, but I would say we're radicals, at least by a lot of people's definition, because we have the radical belief that people shouldn't be able to steal from you and cage you and kill you just because 51% of the people who vote believe that. We think people should be free. We're small government men. We think government should be so small that we're smaller than the guy that thinks he can drown it in a bathtub, that it should be that small. We're so small that, as Davi Barker says, co-host Freedom Fiends co-host Davi Barker says, I want government so small that it's theorized about by particle physicists. And we think these 12 steps, I don't know if they can help us get there, but I think they can help us get to where we need to be personally, which is certainly a start to what to do about it. I've seen so much infighting and mucky-muckying in the libertarian community lately that I'm gone. I'm out of it, man. I'm resigned. I've resigned from it. I think I'd never really joined it, but, you know, some people think I have. So I'm turning my back on it, which isn't to say I don't still have a lot of friends in it that I'll hang out with, but I don't want any part of any movement that has some of the, like, just insane things and screeching and just... Man, the thing is, it's having growing pains. It's kind of like it's getting bigger, and that's a good thing. And this is a quality problem that it's having growing pains to the point where, like, there are people just being loons all day long. And, you know, I think of some of these. Well, let me say this. I took fearless searching moral inventories, and I continue to pretty regularly. You don't just do this once. That's pretty important to stress. You know, you learn to do these, and then you go through them and incorporate them in your everyday life all the time, whenever you can. And I am far from perfect. Ben is far from perfect. And yeah, man, I think Liberty needs to take a 12-step program. Nah, man, Statist Anonymous. If you want it, it's here. If you have a desire to stop being statist or stop having bad ideas and being around bad people, come on in and have a virtual cup of coffee, and we'll try to help you, and you can help us in the same way. All right. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah. So what I was thinking is to kind of look at some of – kind of making a – back to the thought of making a list. So I was thinking, you know, what if we ask some basic questions to the listener to get them to kind of work on this list to themselves? So what is it that we desire so much? Now, let's think about this. Let me back up before I bury the lead. Realize that whatever government gives to you, it had to steal from somebody else, because government in and of itself is only the product of other people's stuff. So if government is giving you something, whether that's money or whether it's a service or whatever it is, if government is providing something to you, it's providing it at the cost of someone else.
Yep.
So then we ask ourselves some questions. What do we desire so much that we think others should be robbed by taxation so that we can have our desires? What is, you know, I like Tootsie Rolls. Now, I don't eat very many Tootsie Rolls because my teeth are in really bad condition. Not because of Tootsie Rolls. My teeth are in bad condition from car accidents where I got bashed in the head and broke my teeth off. But so I like Tootsie Rolls. But do I like Tootsie Rolls so much that I would want the government to force my neighbor to pay so that I can have Tootsie Rolls? Of course not. That's ridiculous. But what is it that you, the listener, what is it that you desire so much that you're willing to hire a guy who works for the government to go to your neighbor and rob your neighbor so that you can get it? What is important enough for me to rob my neighbor to get? Oh, and here's another thing. We think, well, you know, without the government, we wouldn't have these rules in society, and there would just be mayhem, and people would just be on the streets doing whatever they wanted. But think about this too. I mean, there are certain rules that are built into human nature, and there are ways that people act and interact among themselves that are natural to human beings. But what rules can you think of, or what individual rule can you think of that's so important that you would take money out of your own pocket and pay a cop to beat someone to death because they didn't obey that rule? Is being pulled over for a traffic citation important enough to you that you look at a guy, you're like, hey, that guy didn't use his left turn signal. Are you willing to take money out of your own pocket and pay a cop to beat that guy to death because he didn't use his turn signal, and then he didn't move the way the cop told him to move when the cop told him to get out of his car, and maybe he didn't have his hands in exactly the right position when the cop told him to freeze, or maybe the cop told him, freeze, drop it, don't move, and all these things at the same time, and how could he do four different commands, and he didn't move exactly right, so now the cop's going to beat him to death. What rule is important enough for you to pay a cop to kill somebody for?
None, man.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Squisgar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Hey, baby, can I go? Can I go? Can I go, baby? Can I go?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have to do that anymore. You ever heard that Johnny Cash song? It's called Like a Soldier, Like a Soldier Coming Home from the War. It's about him getting sober. If there are people listening who've heard that song, listen to it again if you don't know that. Listen to it again. Listen to the lyrics. And it is absolutely about the process of getting sober and going through this same kind of stuff. So, Ben, lay some more fourth step madness on me. Why don't you, or goodness, why don't you start with the reading the fourth step again and then drop some mad science?
Yeah. So we've gone through the first three steps in our previous shows.
Of Status Anonymous. This is Status Anonymous.
Status.
It's how to get rid of the government out of your head. Yeah, here we go.
In 12 easy steps.
36.
So step
36
four.
Easy, yeah. Installments of one Satoshi each. All right, go on.
Number four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And this is the homework we're going through.
I'll say one thing about, you know, when I started doing this, I had fear, and I was like, I told my sponsor, I'm doing it wrong. It says fearless, and I have fear. And he explained to me that to be fearless doesn't mean you have no fear. It means you keep going forward into whatever you're afraid of until you're past it. I think that's pretty important.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, very often, fear, we talk about instincts. Fear is a really important aspect of instinct. When we feel ourselves cornered or we feel threatened in some way, there are certain instinctual ways that we react to that. You know, we might huddle down, we might strike out, we might try to run. There are just ways that your body tells you and your mind deep down inside the parts of your brain that work so fast you don't even have to think. Deep down in there are instincts that tell you to react now. And sometimes that's not necessary because we have put fear on stuff that we don't necessarily have to be afraid of.
Yeah, and without fear, and this goes back to the idea you were talking earlier about how, you know, most things that are detriments in humans' lives that they have in their own life because of their own actions are natural instincts taken to an extreme. And Dobby Barker and I did a whole show on this about deciding that the eighth deadly sin was actually the hamster in your brain running on the squeaky wheel. It was becoming obsessed with things to the point where they keep you up at night and you can't think of anything else. And you gotta go on Facebook and talk about what this guy did and why people, or whether it's, you know, lust or whether it's greed or whether it's avarice, any of these things. But without fear, without some fear, the natural instinct of fear is good. Without fear, there'd be no human race. We would have been eaten by tigers long ago, you know. Without being afraid of fire, we would have been burned up long ago, you know. Without, you know, fear, without, and react like pain too. Like pain is a good thing in moderation. Like, okay, you're out, you're early man before much technology. You're outside. It's cold. You're freezing. Find shelter. Make shelter. You know, like all the things that exist that are people things, you know, and they're animal things too. Animals make shelters. Animals avoid predators when they can. You know, all of these things are really innate in people. And, you know, one thing I've heard about why people are so stressed a lot of the times these days in modern times is that, you know, we have this adrenaline reaction, and it basically exists so we can run away from a saber-toothed tiger. And most people don't have to deal with things like saber-toothed tigers anymore. And they work in cubicles with fluorescent lights and drink a lot of coffee and take a lot of nicotine and don't get a lot of exercise. And they just kind of like buzz and go to this like near flight or fight instinct almost constantly of an adrenaline overdose. When there's no need to, man, just relax.
Yeah, you know, there's so much in modern life that breeds that. You mentioned the cubicle life. I've talked quite a bit about that because that's kind of one of my pet peeves. You know, you wake up in the morning with literally an alarm. Think about the word alarm.
Yeah, you are waked. Yeah. Well, you're woken up by being alarmed. Yeah. You know, what I do? My wife works in an office. I work at home. I'm up at night a lot, and a lot of times, you know, I'll see what her alarm's set at. It'll be like 48 minutes or an hour from when, you know, like I want to go to bed right now, but you know, if her alarm's going to go off in like within an hour, I will try to stay up so I can turn it off and gently wake her up so she does not wake by being alarmed, and she really likes it.
And so you get alarmed to wake up. You're in a hurry. You're in a rush to get, you know, get your face shaved or whatever it is, the rituals that you go through, get some food shoved in your mouth, get some coffee down your throat. You jump. The average person jumps in their car, which is essentially just, you know, a very expensive coffin, and they jump on the highway. And then they're mesmerized because typical commutes are just like sit there, run in the car, and your brain doesn't really think. But all the time, you're like 2 inches away from death with the other cars zipping past you at 70 miles an hour.
And they're listening to the Freedom Fiends. A lot of our listeners tell me they listen during their commute. So, yeah, man, I hope we make it better for you in some way.
It's really difficult to deal with these natural instincts that have been developed over time, and now we put them into the modern world and try to live with them. Going back to, I wanted to read another quote from that book, going back to that, alcoholics especially should be able to see that instinct run wild in themselves is the underlying cause of their destructive drinking. And you can apply that to anything. You know, we're talking about office situation. It's these instincts run wild. Your desire to deal with, or you know, you mentioned Facebook, anything like that that brings up these big emotions that you feel like it has to be dealt with right now, and the whole world revolves around this one thing, and it just overwhelms your life to the point of where you think that, you know, the sun is not going to rise tomorrow unless this problem is taken care of.
Yeah. There's a cartoon that's been going around the internet since way before Facebook. It's like, you know, woman in lingerie, like trying to tempt, you know, like get her husband back to bed, and he's got his back to her, and he's on the computer, and he's like, I can't. Somebody's wrong on the internet. Somebody's always wrong on the internet. And you know, if you want to get specific about Facebook, and this is true of a lot of social networks now, and it's one reason I am again going to leave them all at some point, probably. Except Twitter, because this is just headlines. I like that. There's no beefs really on Twitter. Facebook actually hires like psychiatrists to figure out how to make it more addictive and keep people on it. And they actually got busted or outed about a year ago for doing some kind of like psychological experiment on a large number of users. Do you remember that? I don't remember the details of it, but it was something about like playing with their feed and like only giving them bad news or only giving them good, some other people only good news or something like that. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I read that article. It doesn't fully come to mind who did it or whatever, but yeah, that they were intentionally altering the feed as to what people, some people saw one thing, other people saw another thing, and they played with them to see how they would react and what they would click on and what they would like.
That's evil, man. And you know, people are still on it. Even though there's all those problems with it, kind of like people are still on Skype, even though go read the Wikipedia article on Skype, and in particular, read the part about security. And it's had really bad security issues since even before Microsoft bought it. But everyone's on Skype because it's like, oh, Skype works great. They're like, you know, I say go to FiendPhone. It's great. It just takes a little more work to use at this point. But that's FiendPhone.com, FiendPhone.com. But yeah, Ben, so I don't want to be manipulated by things. So I try to stay off of those things as much as possible, like face beef.
Yeah, and that's kind of, let's try to take it back towards the government again. It's kind of the same thing. If you know, you wake up in the morning, you turn on the news, you see what's going on the news, and you think, oh man, what's happening in Paris, or what's happening in the Middle East, or what's happening in London, or what's happening in Washington, D.C. And it's the same thing as happening with Facebook, where they actually have a business model that relies upon keeping you in a panicked state, thinking that, you know, you're about to be invaded, all your freedoms are about to be taken away, and, you know, or whatever that the panic point is. And they do studies on that. The news media does studies to find out what buttons they can push in your brain to make you so interested that you're going to keep coming back and checking CNN, or you're going to keep coming back and seeing what the pundits have to say on Fox, because, you know, they have the answers, surely. But really, this is all going back to those instincts that are twisted to think that, you know, the village is under attack, or or there's wolves in the woods or whatever, when really it's just a company or a corporation or an arm of the government or whatever that's playing with your brain to keep you in that excited state rather than to be able to calm down and look around yourself and have the level of peace and serenity to say, you know what, I'm not under threat. I'm fine. I can handle this all on my own. I don't need, you know, I don't need to pay a government thug to go beat up a guy because he made a left-hand turn wrong. I'm okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a level of freedom that I found getting away from Facebook. I've been Facebook free for what now, like a year and a half or something.
But you have secondhand Facebook sometimes.
We were talking about that during one of the breaks. I was going to make the joke that, you know, I walked into the restaurant the other day and was trying to enjoy my meal, but there was secondhand Facebook going on. I'm offended at secondhand Facebook.
Yeah, I am.
But it is hard. You know, I have people coming at me from different directions saying, do you see what's going on in Facebook? Answer this. We have to deal with it now.
Yeah.
It's just playing on those.
It's trapped. It really is. They just want to stimulate your limbic system to get you all fired up and all greasy and yelling. Because, you know, they get paid, you know, a quarter of a eighth of a 16th of a cent, all, you know, millisecond cents for every page you click on, every single time, every link you click on there, they show different ads. And, you know, I don't look at the ads, but who knows if they subconsciously influence me, seeing them in the corner of my eye. So, yeah, I think it might be a good time to leave. Maybe we should both leave on the show. But you know what? You can't actually do that. It takes 2 weeks to leave Facebook. I did it and snuck back. I relapsed. You know, Skype, you can't delete a Skype account, too. You can only, like, make it invalid. And Skype runs in the background and, like, sends traffic when it's turned off. That's kind of weird. You have to turn it off. You have to close out of it completely in the system tray to be able to use FiendPhone well. It seems to interfere with other VoIPs. We'll be back with some four-step redemption in the third act after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
So, Ben,
Michael,
you were wrong.
I was wrong.
Tell me how you were wrong.
We had talked earlier, and you asked if I was going to cover the seven deadly sins, and I had two different steps mixed up in my mind, four and five, and for some reason I was thinking the seven deadly sins were listed in step five, but they're not. They're actually listed in step four, so I should probably start by or finish by covering those.
Yeah.
So let me read through those real quick, the seven deadly sins, and don't get hung up on this word sins. I mean, you can put any kind of label on this stuff that you're more comfortable with. It doesn't have to take religious connotations. So we have pride, greed, lust, anger, gluttony, envy, and sloth. And each of these is based on a very important human characteristic that makes us what we are, that's good as long as it's kept in balance. You know, taking a certain amount of pride in your work is a good thing as long as it stays within balance. And greed, the same way, wanting to have enough to make sure that you live and you have a good life and making sure that you're providing for your family. That's good. There's nothing wrong with that. But when it's out of balance, then it turns into greed and lust. Lust is the same thing. You know, the desire of reproduction is absolutely necessary for our survival as a species. But when it gets out of control, then, you know, and anger is so important. There are times when you need to be angry. But if anger is a thing that just you dwell in constantly, digging up old things and never letting go of stuff. So each one of these is an important thing to have if it's in balance, but it's when it gets out of balance, that's where the problem comes in. So I wanted to real quick read another section from the book here. He says, we also clutch at another wonderful excuse for avoiding an inventory. Our present anxieties and troubles, we cry, are caused by the behavior of other people, people who really need a moral inventory. So, yeah, so it's the Democrats, it's the Republicans, it's those people on Facebook, it's the Taliban, it's Israel. No, it's the Jews, it's the gays, it's the welfare bums, it's the Muslims, it's the immigrants. They're the problem. No, no, no. You know what the real problem is? The problem is me. The problem is you. The problem is your reaction to all these stimuli. And instead of jumping into fear, jumping into hate, jumping into lust and greed and anger, instead of jumping to those conclusions and just dwelling on those things, the key is in bringing ourselves into balance and finding out that deep inside, rather than looking at the bottle for your answer or pills for the answer or for government solutions as the answer, rather than that, we need to look at ourselves and see exactly what it is that we can, what can we deal with? What can we change in our lives and what can we not change? And there's even that old prayer, you know, and that's actually from the third step that I didn't read last time.
Well, the Serenity Prayer predates AA, but it's best known from AA.
Yeah, yeah. But that's to and I'm not quoting it perfectly, but it's
God to, grant to, me the thi- God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah, there's a lot of comfort that can come in that if you really think about it. Even if you're not, even if you're an atheist or agnostic or whatever, and you don't really visualize a great power out there controlling all the strings of the universe, just thinking about dwelling on that concept in that prayer is a thing that will bring a certain amount of serenity to you. You know, if you think about it also, there's one more phrase that's in the book that I wanted to read before we get out of today's show.
Right.
Our egomania digs two disastrous pitfalls. Either we insist upon dominating the people that we know, or we depend upon them far too much. And this is kind of the whole story of government. Either we look at government as a way to dominate other people and get from them what we want, or we are completely reliant upon government and we depend on it to provide for all of our needs. And if that time ever comes that it doesn't provide for us, you know, we're crushed. We don't know what to do. And there are so many people in life that have that position, whether we're talking about government or whether we're talking about, you know, alcohol or an addiction of some kind or a personal relationship where you have invested so much of your life into following the words of another person or following, allowing another person to lead you through life. And then, you know, that person might vanish out of your life or that person might fail. It might turn out, you know, what do you know? There they are caught in the motel with the hooker or whatever. And your whole world comes crushing down when you find out these things. But it's so much better to be to sit down and be honest with yourself and to be able to face these things. And when we get into the next step, we're going to take the next logical step in what to do with this list that you've put together. Michael?
Yep. It's been a great show, Ben.
Yeah. Good talking to you, Michael.
Appreciated it. And tomorrow, probably, we'll be doing step 5. Thanks, Ben, for helping me make my life a better thing. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael.
Glad I met you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You too.
It's been the Freedom Fiends. You can go to freedomfiends.com to get all 600 and some episodes. We had our 600th episode the other night. It was a party. It was fun. Worms.
Yeah.